dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In that war, of course, our principal and ever more dangerous adversary is communist China. It has for decades been engaged in unrestricted warfare against us, a term that was used in a book of that name by two senior People's Liberation Army colonels back in 1999 to describe how China would defeat and ultimately destroy the United States without going to old-fashioned war against us. A man who has studied closely what the Chinese are up to, how they are waging that kind of warfare against us, the ominous implications for freedom, ours and others, should Communist China and the party that rules it, the Chinese Communist Party, succeed in their ambitious plans, is our guest for this full hour. He's a dear friend of mine, a very valued colleague, and the chairman of a new Committee on the Present Danger, China, that we started with me serving as its vice chairman just about a year ago. And this seemed like an opportune moment to take stock with Brian Kennedy, the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger, China, about all of these topics and explore with him the necessity of getting this issue right in the 2020 election, when American voters will be making a decision about who will be the next commander-in-chief. They must be mindful that that individual, whoever he or she may be, whatever their political philosophy or party, they will confront as job number one, certainly in the national security space, certainly in the economic space, and almost certainly in the public health space, the challenge, the present and growing danger of China. Brian Kennedy, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio, my friend. It's so good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be back on Secure Freedom Radio, and great to be back with you. And thank you for all you do for this country to explain to Americans the threats we face. And it couldn't come at a more important time in our history, just given the fact that even though we have this fabulous military that I know you've been promoting and working on to build up all these years, we Americans simply don't understand all the threats we face. And so there's much more to do. And it's great to be here on Secure Freedom Radio to talk about these with you.
Let's talk a little bit about, before we get into some of the specifics of those threats from China, the Committee on the Present Danger. Remind us of what that name refers to, really, in the history of the United States, as well as the sort of quality of the people that have been pulled together to be part of the team now and what they're doing.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. In the history of this country, even though we have understood that there were threats to the nation, what some may call existential threats, we have always been, as a democratic republic, slow to understand these things. And so after World War II, when the threat of the Soviet Union was becoming so pronounced, a lot of Americans didn't quite appreciate all that was going to be required to defend ourselves from the Soviet Union. So you had a group of national security practitioners and, you know, former generals, writers, thinkers, you know, people who were in the public policy or defense policy world, get together and form something they called the Committee on the Present Danger. And they thought, as private citizens, they could explain to Americans the need for a robust military to challenge and deter the Soviet Union and to be able to fight the Korean War and to face all the challenges that America would face. It proceeded in, you know, various iterations through the, you know, late 40s into the 50s and 60s. But really it was the 70s when we're in the middle of the Cold War, Jimmy Carter's president, there's a real lack of clarity on how the country ought to be defended from the Soviet threat, that again, a group of national security intellectuals, policymakers, but a very broad group of people, some labor union people, novelists, writers, intellectuals, formed the Committee on the Present Danger, you know, back then, with a lot of people, including the former governor of California, Ronald Reagan, who would later become president. They made arguments in those, you know, late 70s for how we had to rebuild the military to defend the country. They would help Ronald Reagan get elected. And then once he was elected, he brought many of them, I think 39 of them, to his administration, where they helped him fight the Cold War and ultimately defeat the Soviet Union. There was an iteration back after 9/11 that again tried to describe the Islamic threat, very valuable at the time, complementing some of the fine work you were doing back then at the Center for Security Policy and still are. What we haven't had is a similar type of committee, as it were, and there's a lot of sensible people in Washington, but you and I and others thought last year and the year before, we need to have a committee on the present danger, China, simply to explain to Americans that it's not just the economic threat from the loss of jobs or the theft of our intellectual property, that China presents a genuine existential threat to the United States. I mean, nowadays existential threats get talked about when it comes to global warming and, you know, transgender rights and every imaginable social issue. When in fact, the real existential threat is that of communist China. They're building a very robust military to challenge ours. They have fifth generation fighter aircraft. They have nuclear weapons. They are a very big nation, and they have a very active political and intelligence influence operation here against us to make sure that we don't actually understand what that threat is. And so the committee today was really designed to assemble a group of Americans and others who could articulate both for the administration and in the media and around the country just what the threats are, what the range of threats are to the United States from the Chinese Communist Party. And I think over this past year, we've done a very nice job in highlighting some of the key threats that America faces and the unique challenge that Communist China presents to the United States.
Let's take a short break, Brian Kennedy, because I want to drill down on each of those topics with you in some detail, because as you say, the Committee on the Present Danger is about trying to make sure we've got situational awareness among the American people. And we will be right back with more on that right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are continuing a very topical conversation with the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger, China, Brian Kennedy. Brian is, among other things, a very accomplished contributor to the public policy debate, having spent many years involved with, running, and now as a senior fellow of the outstanding Claremont Institute in Claremont, California. He is also a principal in the American Strategy Group these days, in addition to his responsibilities with the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Brian, you mentioned a couple of the threats that are a particular focus of our committee, and I just wanted to give you an opportunity to discuss them in some detail because of the various ways in which the concerns that we are explaining are manifesting themselves almost every single day. And I'd like to start, I think, with the economic warfare piece. What China has been doing, you know, since, I guess, at least Deng Xiaoping's day in the early 1990s, if not before, in terms of trying to engage and exploit and subvert this country for the purposes of strengthening China's economy, among other things. Walk us through that, if you would.
I'm always careful when I talk about China that we don't make any of this sound like any kind of grand conspiracy, as if, you know, there's some red scare that's somehow irrational that we ought not to be concerned about. That this is, in a way, just world politics. China is a great nation with great interests. They're a big nation. They have 1.4 billion people. I mean, that's, you know, we're a country of 330 million right now. They're 1.4 billion. Just in the course of things, they're going to pursue their strategic interests. They know that we are a democratic republic. They know they can influence public opinion here. They know they can influence elite opinion. And so for the better part of, you know, 40 years, they have been working hard to manipulate both popular and elite opinion about them. And the main things they want to try to influence are the ideas that, one, we should be cooperative with them when it comes to economic growth, that their economic growth would be good for the United States. And if they grew economically, you know, so the line of argument would hold, that if they become more economically free, they'll become more politically free, and that America as a commercial republic will want to sell all sorts of American-made goods to China. So openness, engagement, all these things was going to be a good thing for the United States and also a good thing for China. That's been the message they have sold both to American policymakers, on college campuses, among, you know, the economic and political elite of this country, Wall Street, most especially, this idea that we can engage with China and everybody will be the better. They also want to present to the world that they are no military threat, that they're entirely inward looking, that, you know, they just want to make China a better place and they have no interest in, you know, looking abroad for, you know, building any kind of empire the way we often thought of during the Cold War and the Soviet Union. So they have spent, literally, China has billions and billions of dollars. You know, if you look at one estimate, they spend today $13 billion a year on these kind of propaganda and influence campaigns here in the United States, and have been for some time. They have nurtured this notion that we ought to simply keep on engaging with China, and that even though they steal our intellectual property, and even though they have forced technology transfers, and even though American corporations and businesses can't have access to Chinese markets, that this is still benefiting somehow the American people and the world. And so when you try to think about their economic warfare, it is built around this notion of an influence operation to try to persuade Americans that, you know, even though what you may be seeing is American jobs leaving, you know, don't worry about that. This is still going to be good for you overall. So a piece of their economic warfare is to engage in the theft of intellectual property, unfair trade practices, et cetera, while at the same time having this elaborate and sophisticated influence operation so that Americans don't quite understand what's going on. And I think it was not until Donald Trump, you know, getting elected president, that you were actually going to have someone in the White House build an administration that would challenge these ideas and these activities by the PRC to steal our intellectual property and do all these bad things economically to the United States. And that, I mean, exploiting that is important.
You mentioned as part of the context here, the earlier iteration of the Committee on the Present Danger and the role that it played in helping Ronald Reagan, in much the same way, confound the conventional wisdom, confound the elite opinion, confound the practice of successive American presidents, Republican and Democratic, that engagement, they called it détente in the day, would be good. And anyone who thought otherwise, let alone who really was insistent that we had to get away from that kind of engagement, was an outlier at best and, you know, lunatic fringe at worst. So these two presidents have, you know, I think that in common, and to their great credit, they've stuck to their guns and been pushing back against what their respective adversaries were doing rather than accommodate them. And Brian, a very important example of the kind of predatory trade practices that have been a feature of arguably the most important or most prominent feature, at least, of the Chinese unrestricted warfare against us to date is what our colleague on the Committee on the Present Danger, Rosemary Gibson, has been pointing out about our dependency and supply chains in China that are at best unreliable and at worst downright dangerous. And talk a little bit about what Rosemary has found and the present reasons to be concerned about our dependency on China for medicine.
Yeah, it's an important point. Let's start with just sort of the obvious intellectual idea, then get to the particular. If you believe that globalism is a good thing, that we should integrate all the global economies and use that comparative advantage to drive down costs everywhere and always, which is really the intellectual backbone of this whole idea of globalism, right? Drive down all costs as much as possible, period. That's all that matters. The American pharmaceutical industry, Rosemary points out, adopting that model, thought, how can we drive down common medicines? Let's have them made in China. Not only will we make them in China, we'll basically offshore all the production, or I think she highlights the fact that 90% of the APIs, the active pharmaceutical ingredients that go into our medicines, are made today in China, and that we don't produce much of anything here in the United States, so that we become almost entirely dependent on communist China for that production of our medicine. Now, by the way, even if this were, let's just say, France producing, you know, these APIs, these pharmaceutical ingredients, even if it were France, even if it were England, even if it were anywhere else, it would be irresponsible to have our medicines produced by another country. And so to secure America, you first have to start with the physical health of the American people. If you can't produce your own medicines and are relying on a country like communist China, which is not a reliable trading partner for your medicines, how dangerous is that? And I think I think Rosemary points out that this is near insanity to rely on other nations for our stockpile of medicines. And I think this is one of the things the president's been highlighting. I think you and Rosemary and others did a wonderful job pushing all of this to the administration in some key areas of the administration to simply highlight this fact. And this is one of the things the president mentioned last night on Sean Hannity. The fact that so many of our drugs are made in China, and this is simply unacceptable, and he wants to bring this back to the United States as quickly as possible. So I think here's a real example of where you talk about an issue long enough and clearly enough, it gets the attention of policymakers.
Well, and it does perhaps need saying that that's been greatly accelerated and intensified by this problem with the coronavirus. And Brian, we're going to have to take a short break here in just a moment, but I want to talk with you when we come back about lessons that are being learned by Americans on a whole host of issues relating to China coming out of the outbreak and the response to it by the Chinese Communist Party of this so-called coronavirus. Others have been inclined to call it the Wu flu for Wuhan. But whatever one calls it, this is a manifestation of the present danger that I think is intensifying interest in and concern about all of the rest of them. Brian Kennedy is our guest. He is the former president of the Claremont Institute, the president of the American Strategy Group, and a fellow of Claremont. And we will be right back with him in his role as chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Brian Kennedy's in the house virtually, I'm very pleased to say. A dear friend hails from California, where he long presided over the Claremont Institute and from where he now runs the American Strategy Group. He is also the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. And we're taking the opportunity of an hour-long conversation with Brian to learn about the work of the committee and the reasons that have impelled it to work so hard now to try to educate our countrymen and women and those who would represent us about the dangers that we face from the Chinese. And Brian, we were talking a little bit before the break about the coronavirus. What would your takeaways be about the insights this disease and how it's been handled by the Chinese to date give us about the larger problems that we're facing with respect to communist China?
Interesting, when it comes to the coronavirus, that you saw immediately, relatively immediately, just how lethal it was. You know, news reports were coming out of China about people getting sick, about people dying, about China taking these extraordinary measures to lock down Hubei province, which is like 55, 56 million people, very big place, trying to lock that down to prevent the virus from spreading. Now, you would think, just in the course of things, the Chinese knew right then and there that if it was spreading through Hubei province, it could spread throughout China, which is why they were locking it down, but also because they were putting 22,000 Chinese citizens, mostly on airplanes, and sending them to the United States every day for about 3 months. They knew this was going to spread to the United States and therefore the entire world. You would think the Communist Party was, this is a rare opportunity to open the door to the rest of the world, have them help us learn about this deadly disease, work with us to solve it. We can work with them to prevent outbreaks in their country. You know, they could have really justified doing business with China. But what did they do? They arrested the doctor who talked about it. They, you know, had basically a media blackout when it came to any medical personnel talking about this beyond immediate party, you know, the immediate Communist Party apparatus. They didn't share with the United States what was going on. They didn't share with the World Health Organization what was going on. The United States today has an office of our Center for Disease Control in China, and yet they still won't give us access to their own research on what has transpired. And so at this rare opportunity where they could open up to the world and work with the world, try to stop this deadly virus, they did the exact opposite. And they did the exact opposite in ways that were dangerous both for their own people and for the people of the rest of the world, demonstrating the Chinese Communist Party is not only bad for the Chinese people, but it is very deadly if you're a citizen of any other country. That is completely unacceptable in this day and age. And the fact that that continues today should be an outrage to most Americans, especially those Americans who will die because of this coronavirus.
Brian, let me switch gears. You have been participating in several of the Committee on the Present Danger, China's 2020 Policy Battlespace threat briefings, as we've called them, including notably in Nevada and California. And a feature of several of those conversations has been China's inhumanity towards its own people and the technologies and capabilities that it is now bringing to bear to intensify their control of the people of China and their ability to punish those who are out of favor and those who are in favor to be rewarding them. Give us a flavor of what this says both about the Chinese Communist Party, how they treat their own people, and what that likely means for how they would treat us as well, and some of these technologies that they're using and their provenance.
Yes, well, Communist China is, as we know, a totalitarian regime. And it's an odd kind of totalitarian regime because they're mixing communism with a kind of mercantilism and quasi-capitalism that is created because of their unfair trade practices and theft of our intellectual property, a lot of very wealthy people in communist China. And so you have these big mega cities within China that look extremely prosperous. And there are many hundreds of millions of Chinese who have become very prosperous from these practices. But they've also engaged in this very vicious form of totalitarianism where they suppress freedom of speech among their own people. And so they have internet firewalls that make sure that people can't communicate as freely either with each other or with the rest of the world. And they've created technologies, social credit scoring, they call it, where they can actually monitor how people interact online and in their communities. Just to let everyone in China know that either you're going to agree to the Communist Party line or you may suffer consequences. And, you know, the most radical part of all that, of course, is their treatment of the Uyghur population within Communist China. There are, I believe, 6 million Uyghurs in China. About 1 million, they think perhaps up to 2 million Uyghurs are in a kind of concentration camp that is using, you know, technologies to monitor their comings and goings and to make sure they behave a certain way. So China is engaged in this massive experiment to see if they can actually control 1.4 billion people and be able to suppress opinion and communication, and in the case of the Uyghurs, their religious beliefs, all in pursuit of total domination of the Chinese landmass. And so it's a very weird, disturbed thing in so many ways, because it suggests that they have certainly ambitions when it comes to China, but also ambitions when it comes to the rest of Asia and perhaps the entire world, because their ambition knows no bounds, and they're bold and they're hardworking. And, you know, I was struck the other night, or, you know, they keep on playing this Joe Biden clip of him saying that the Chinese, you know, are not going to eat our lunch. They can't even produce enough water, you know, to, you know, service their own people, as if there were this backward country that doesn't know what it's doing. And it's emblematic of the kind of naivete that exists in Washington about communist China and their capabilities and their desire to be the preeminent power on earth. And so part of the work of the committee has been, can we explain to enough people around the country just the facts of what's going on? We don't need to vilify, you know, I hope nothing I was saying sounded like I was trying to vilify them. I'm just trying to describe what communist China is actually doing. And, you know, imagine in this country, if you were to restrict people because of their religious belief and put them in camps, or, you know, limit how often they can use their cell phones, or limit their access to the internet. Well, it would seem near impossible in this country to pull that off, but the communist Chinese are substantially pulling that off in a country of 1.4 billion people, suggesting that they are very sophisticated about how they can control, you know, the behavior of people. And you have a Chinese population, even though they are, you know, a good people in so many ways, they're just people, right, with all the failings that people have. But there are people who seem to now be turning, and even though they may not like the Chinese Communist Party, they seem ill-equipped to challenge their dominance. And I think one of the things we've been trying to describe to people is how and why the Communist Party ought to be challenged. Because if they continue down this path in their own country, a time will come where they will want to do that to any country on earth that wants to challenge their preeminence. And of course, the United States is the country that is not going to be turned into a second-rate power when it comes to communist China. And, you know, not to be partisan in any way about this, this is one of the controversies surrounding Trump, President Trump. President Trump is saying, I'm just not going to let that happen. I'm going to put America first. I'm going to make sure we have the ability to defend our economic interests and our national security concerns. And that is one reason, I believe, that the American left and the, you know, what we often refer to as the global elite or globalists, that's one reason they're so opposed to Trump, because he is upsetting that way we've been thinking for the past 40 years about communist China and the premise that everything is just going to be fine and dandy when it comes to our relations.
Brian, we're going to pick up on that, the concerns that the American people have, and most especially what we at the Committee on the Present Danger of China are trying to do to help translate those concerns into corrective action, notably in this critical election year. That and much more with Brian Kennedy, the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger of China, straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the fourth and final installment of our conversation with Brian Kennedy, the president of the American Strategy Group, and the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. And Brian, I think in the previous three segments, you've been handsomely describing the fix we're in, the challenge that we have in part helped create by underwriting Chinese Communist Party and other entities like the People's Liberation Army and so on, becoming much more formidable threats to our own nation and its people. You were talking about the concerns the American people have, and I think one of the things that the Committee on the Present Danger of China has very helpfully done is study those, notably through a poll that was conducted by John McLaughlin. Tell us a little bit about the poll and its important findings.
One always wonders, what do Americans think about this? American citizens, not the Wall Street hedge fund managers and not the talking heads on MSNBC, but actual everyday Americans. And when we surveyed everyday Americans, we found that they are across the board, regardless of their political party, regardless of their age, their race, their gender, they were concerned about China, its economic behavior, and its ongoing relationship with the United States. And as the pollster John McLaughlin said, this is a real sleeper issue for 2020, that, you know, the Democrats want to make the election about Donald Trump and either his his competency or his honesty or Russia, 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 and all that kind of stuff. President Trump is going to talk about his many achievements in growing the U.S. economy, but he's also going to talk about making a very tough trade deal with China and holding them to account. And again, many of these things are still in the works, to be clear, but he did sign the first phase of a trade agreement. They are now looking hard at how you prevent China from continuing to steal our intellectual property and engage in all these, you know, bad behaviors. And it just turns out in our polling, the American people are concerned about those very things.
And I think your point about this being a very impressive, if not actually uniform, near uniform level of concern across the various, as they call them, crosstabs, demographic subgroups. I guess what I wanted to ask you, Brian, is about your experiences with the threat briefings that we've been doing. A lot of this concern and the reasons for it have been, you know, manifested in our interactions in those programs at the state level with both individual Americans and with their elected representatives at all kinds of levels. The point being that I think that can indeed inform and become a very important part of the choice that the American people are going to be making this fall with respect to the future direction of our country vis-a-vis the Chinese Communist Party. And let me hasten to add that these various briefings, all of which are videotaped and recorded and available at our Committee on the Present Danger website, presentdangerchina.org, are not partisan. These are simply policy presentations in which we discuss, again, the stakes. But I think they've broadly, strongly confirmed what we found in the poll and should be indeed the basis for action by elected officials or those who seek to be elected officials, notably as commander-in-chief. So, Brian, if you could, let's take a few minutes in closing here and focus in on the kinds of things that the Committee on the Present Danger China, the people who've made these presentations available at presentdangerchina.org, and the people that we've been working with are urging now be done by the United States to contend with the present and growing danger from communist China.
The most immediate things we've been recommending that I think Americans should be concerned about is this issue of financing. And so that's an immediate thing. The Thrift Savings Plan, which is part of this federal retirement board, they're going to be meeting soon about whether they're going to continue this practice, go down this road of investing in China. The committee has said that needs to be scrutinized, and anybody who has any kind of serious analysis would say that needs to be suspended. So we've been highlighting that immediately. We talked about Rosemary Gibson and the productions of medicines in the United States. As we see from this coronavirus, globalization and supply chain management has not worked for the benefit of the American people when it comes to the production of medicine. That needs to be brought back to the United States immediately. And I think third, a intellectual reorientation on the part of American political representatives needs to occur. We found in this poll the American people see and understand that China presents a threat to the country on a wide range of economic and potentially military issues. What they're not seeing is their elected officials sharing that concern or expressing that concern. And I think to the extent that we go around the country and talk to the right citizens and elected officials, they're beginning to understand the need, even if you're a state representative or a congressman, the need to understand just what a challenge and a threat communist China plays. And let me just say quickly that Secretary Pompeo at the National Governors Association went around to all the governors in a major speech and said, China is coming after you and your state, and you need to be prepared to understand the ramifications of doing business with China and what that portends for the prosperity of your state. And so Secretary Pompeo, who we have been very supportive of, and his seriousness here, he himself has been warning Americans around the country that this is a challenge they're going to need to understand and ultimately do something about. And the purpose of the committee is to help him explain that and do our best to simply let the facts speak for themselves. China is a threat, and we need to understand it and be prepared for it.
In closing, Brian, one other dimension of this that it seems to me is an important prescription from the committee is stitching several of the things you've just talked about together. If we are not going to continue to invest foolishly, recklessly, dangerously in China, there is a considerable amount of capital that could be used for other purposes. And those purposes could include investing in America. Talk a little bit about an American first investment strategy, Brian, as an alternative to the one that we've seen Wall Street indulge in and the urgent need to adopt it.
Well, let's just look at the numbers. China has signaled that they are desirous to come to U.S. capital markets for $3 to $5 trillion over the next 5 years in new stock offerings or sovereign debt offerings or debt of their state-owned enterprises. Well, that $5 trillion can either be invested in a Chinese corporation that may well mean ill for the United States, or that $5 trillion can be used to invest in American companies that will bring the supply chains back to the United States. And so with the right incentives put in place, meaning either tax incentives or regulatory incentives, the president and the Congress can signal to the American business community that we are open for business. Let's bring those supply chains back to the United States, and let's not compete with Chinese corporations who mean us harm when it comes to the capital that will need to be raised on Wall Street and elsewhere. And so one immediate thing we can do is make sure that we are not disadvantaging American companies from bringing that supply chain back by allowing China into our capital markets, especially given the fact they don't play by rules. The last time they've still not honored the sovereign debt, of the Republic of China. And so they're in default on their past sovereign debt. So the fact that they don't play by the rules should be a signal to all Americans that this is not a good investment. And the fact that President Trump is trying to get them to play by the rules is a much needed thing. And bringing the supply chain back to the United States is, I think, even more important.
Brian Kennedy, thank you for your vision, for your leadership, and for the great work I think that the Committee on the Present Danger of China is doing. I'm proud to be part of it and to be helping in its various aspects, and thank you so much for explaining why that work is as vital as it is. I hope that it will be heard by, of course, both President Trump and his team, as well as those who are seeking to take the jobs that they currently hold on the other side of the aisle. This should not be a partisan issue. It should be, in fact, one in which all of us can embrace and engage an American first approach. And we hope the committee will continue to make the case for doing just that. Thank you, Brian. Come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.